welcome to Souls on Fire with your host, Joe Trainer. Joe is a husband and father of three, and for 29 years was an award-winning and very successful college football coach. Today, he is the director of athletics for Pope John Paul II High School. He is a leader, a man of character, and filled with the joy of the Lord. Joe was running for God's heart and became a soul on fire. Listen in every Monday as Joe interviews other sports figures and businessmen and women who bring their faith into the marketplace. And now, here's Joe Trainer.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Souls on Fire. I'm your host, Joe Trainer, here on this beautiful Monday, again with co-host Colonel Mike Manning, Professor of Leadership Studies at Northeastern University and retired United States Army Colonel. Welcome to the program, brother.
Thank you for having me, Coach.
How was your weekend up there in Beantown?
You know, it was a mostly a really good weekend because I didn't have to do anything.
That's nice.
We not teaching this week, Joe. So I was able to ease into this week with a great deal of peace and relaxation on my mind and in my heart.
How's everything going at the seminary for you with that job?
Yeah, no, it's going well. Thank you for asking. You know, it's a the battle rhythm is it's once every other week. So this was not my Monday. I'll be, in there next Monday. But, really enjoyable. I get more out of that, Joe, than I give.
How many seminarians do you work with, Mike?
Yeah, so it's in this propedeutic year, Joe. We started with four. We lost one. So I've got three young men.
Okay. And then when you call it the propedeutic year, dumb that down for us. What does that mean?
Yeah, so this is it's an initiative that was, I think it originated at the Vatican, and then it, it was, propagated from there. And it's been a couple, 2 to 3 years in the making, Joe. But essentially there was a recognition that the young men that were matriculating through the seminary, they needed kind of an additional year of greening, if you will. So essentially, the young men that are in this cohort during the propedeutic year, they take a little bit of a lighter, they carry a lighter load relative to courses. And there's it's really neat the way that Boston has built it. And I think, frankly, they did this very deliberately. The USCCB built into the system and the approach that each of the seminaries, the major seminaries, would have the flexibility to kind of imagine the propedeutic year, this first year, this extra year, if you will, for the men in, that in a way that really was a manifestation of culture and charism. And so our guys, they have they take three courses at the seminary. Then they're working with Mike Manning on doing some of the leadership development. And then there's an incredible guy by the name of Dr. Vince Lynch that has been associated with the seminary for decades, Joe. And what Vince does is he's spending a lot of time with the guys, encouraging them, inviting them, and walking with them as they do look introspectively, look at their origin stories, and, where are some of those inherent, maybe gaps and challenges that maybe are below the surface that are not manifesting that we all have as human beings, but just being aware of those. So there's a lot of consonance between what he does, what I'm doing, and ideally what we're going to do is we're going to make these guys, we're going to build capacity for them in a way that when they start, Theology 1 next year, in what would have been their first year at the seminary, they're, it's like doing a prep year, Joe. You know, it's
gotcha.
They're going to be better served, more mature.
Mike, do you see this? Is this a national or international seminary movement, or is this strictly something that's happening in the Diocese of Boston?
No, Coach, it's actually an international movement. But what I would tell you is that it's a good question. I think that the mandate came down, hey, you need to do this, right, if you're a major seminary. But I know that there are other seminaries, for example, and you'll remember Father Paul Halliday, Chaplain Halliday, from the Army. Father Paul has just been hired. He's retiring from the Army. He's been hired by a seminary actually out in San Francisco, and he's going to be his transition role out of the military. He's actually going to be building the propedeutic year for them. So,
wow.
Long answer to a short question. I think it's the understanding is that this needs to be up and running. I'm not sure about the timeline for the launch, but some seminaries are ahead of the game while others are still trying to work through it.
And it sounds like Boston's actually ahead of the curve here, huh?
Well, you're not surprised to hear that, are you?
No.
That's a joke.
Especially under your leadership, I'm sure it's moving forward fast.
Yeah. Coach, I was making a sports reference there.
I know that. I know you'll have a chance to watch the Eagles defeat the Chiefs tonight on Monday night. But I wanted to talk tonight, Mike, about yesterday's gospel. It's from Matthew, and you know it's one that kind of troubles some people. You know, kind of obviously the analogy with, you know, as Christ always does, you know, dumbing it down for the audience, so to speak, like he did in his public ministry, and people of my simple mind can relate to most of the parables, but this is one that I've actually struggled with, you know, early on as I interpreted it, and as I kind of peeled back the onion a little bit, I was able to kind of reconcile my internal uneasiness with it. So bear with me here, if you would, as I read the gospel. This is from Matthew 25:14-30. So for it is as if a man going on a journey summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. The one who received 5 talents went off at once and traded with them and made 5 more talents. In the same way, the one who had 2 talents made 2 more talents. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. Then the one who received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more talents, saying, "Master, you handed over to me 5 talents. See, I made 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." And the one with the 2 talents came forward, saying, "Master, you handed over to me 2 talents. See, I have made 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." Then the one who had received the 1 talent also came forward, saying, "Master, I knew that you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent into the ground. Here you have what is yours." But his master replied, "You wicked and lazy slave, you knew, did you, that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I did not scatter? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one with 10 talents. For to all those who have, more will be given, and to all those who have abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. As for this worthless slave, throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Gospel of the Lord. Do you ever struggle with that reading, Mike?
Yeah, I do. I do, Coach. And you know, it obviously, you know, I was in Mass yesterday and got to listen to the gospel and then hear, you know, the Padre, you know, reflect on it in the homily. You know, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, Joe. What I pull from the central message there is that I think, you know, God has given us each exquisite skills and abilities. And I think we're going to be judged by, you know, how we treat other people and certainly, how we love God and do we subordinate our will to his will. And I'm sure many other, you know, evaluation criteria. But I think what this gospel speaks directly to, Coach, is that we have an obligation to use the gifts that God gave us to the best of our ability. And it's non-negotiable. And that's one way I think that we're going to be judged.
No doubt. I know, and anytime I have a hard time with, you know, with some of the interpretation, you know, I always go to Bishop Barron as I've referenced him often with our conversations, and he made some great analogies with this gospel. He talked about, you know, a talent, you know, in ancient times was considered a unit of measure, and he talked about, you know, his parallel with this parable was with God's divine mercy. You know, and you know, and that, you know, and you said it, you know, indirectly, but divine mercy can't be possessed and must be given, and only by giving mercy that we receive from God will we get it back in tenfold. You know.
Wow. Another beautiful, you know, really beautiful kind of interpretation of that gospel.
Yeah. And obviously, just unpacking it, and you said there is definitely a lot to unpack here. But you know, the master being, you know, being representative of God, enter into the joy of your master. You know, which if it was strictly a business transaction, you know, that wouldn't be the language that you normally would use. You know, when you're talking about, you know, the kingdom that. You know, God's kingdom that we're obliged to, as you said, bring here on earth. If we are the good and faithful servant, you know, we'll get to enjoy that measure infinitely and eternally in heaven. You know?
Yeah. No, you know, Joe, as you were talking, I was reflecting on, you know, Bishop Barron's words. You know, I was recalling something that, you know, Mother Teresa said, right? You know, and she has said, you know, for her, we're called to love, right? We're called to love, and we're called to love in a way that there's sacrifice, you know, undergirds that love, right? Or informs that love, sustains that love. And to, you have to love so much that it hurts, right? And you know, and I think, Joe, right, in my life, in your life, in our lives, when we do love, when we choose to love, when we choose to be merciful with others, it multiplies exponentially, right? It's that goodness that begets goodness, and you see it in certainly in relationships, but you see it in the graces that are forthcoming from that love in action, and you see it in the lives of other people.
Yeah, and as you're saying that, I'm thinking, you know, this just came to mind for me, you know, faith without works is dead. You know, it's
right.
How do we, A, who are we supposed to love, right? We're told that, you know, we're taught to love everyone, Gentile and Jew, servant or free. And without the actionable duty of love, our faith is nothing. You know, and I think, you know, when I think of it, you know, the slave that was given the one talent, you know, it was because he didn't know how to share it and spread it. And, you know, and that's when faith, you know, again, faith without works, you know, we're told, you know, the Bible tells us is dead, you know.
No, that's beautifully said. And again, you know, Joe, I think as I, we're, Natalia and I are in the middle of doing this, Father Gately's Marian consecration, you know, to Mary through Jesus, the 33 days. And Father Gately, if you're not familiar with this, he it's been around, I think his book, his approach has been around for a number of years. And I've done it earlier, you know, a number of years back, but we're doing it together now. At any rate, why I mentioned this, Joe, is he illuminates a number of saints, you know, John Paul II, Maximilian Kolbe, Louis de Montfort, and Mother Teresa, as kind of exemplars of what this looks like, right? You know, this of just an incredible devotion to the Blessed Mother, and to Jesus through his mother, right? And Mother Teresa was just everything that she stood for. And to your point about, you know, faith and works, it was about giving more than we have, Joe, right?
Amen.
And I, which is a really interesting, you know, concept. It's this idea of like, you know, and maybe that's the expectation. You know, is that
well? And as you say that, as you're saying that, I don't mean to interrupt you, but you know, I think that's a great point because he gives out different measures to the three slaves. You know what I mean? And two of the slaves gave more than they had. You know, returned more than they had, so to speak. And but Gad, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. You said it, Coach. You said it. You know, we're saying the same thing here. It's I think if we're doing this right, you know, we're kind of in a state of what, you know, being uncomfortable, right? There's this uncertainty. I mean, there's this beauty behind, you know, what the nuns do. We've talked about this separately. You and I have talked this on your program. But they, Joe, I think they recognize that, hey, look, Lord, I'm going to give everything that I have. I'm going to give and I'm going to share with others everything that you have given me. And I trust in return that you're going to provide for me. And it's kind of beautiful. It's this beautiful, it's not a transaction. It's just this beautiful, I think, byproduct of trust and surrender.
So true. That's a great interpretation of that. Mike, I want to segue into now, I want to talk a little bit about the Paschal Mystery that we celebrate and that we, you know, we have a Sunday in the church liturgical year devoted strictly to the Paschal Mystery, but we get a chance every Sunday to celebrate the Paschal Mystery. As I was doing some research on this, the Catechism says that, and I quote this, page 891, Christ's work of redemption, accomplished principally by his passion, death, resurrection, and glorious ascension, whereby dying he destroyed our death, rising he restored our life. The Paschal Mystery is celebrated and made present in the liturgy of the Church, and its saving effects are communicated through the sacraments, especially the Eucharist, which renews the Paschal sacrifice of Christ as the sacrifice offered by the Church. Okay, I'll be honest with you, brother. It was probably 50 years before I actually could identify exactly what when we made reference to the Paschal Mystery, what that meant. And That's not. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that as a source of embarrassment for me. But this is the question I have for you, and you working with, you know, future church leaders. We know that every Sunday we get to celebrate this Paschal mystery, the Passion, the Death, the Resurrection, the Ascension. But how, what can we do as fathers and you know, strong Catholics to encourage a younger population to embrace the Paschal mysteries that they have an opportunity through Sunday Mass?
Joe, that's such an incredible question. And I mean, really, and it really, it dovetails beautifully, Joe, just in response to that. You know, so I've shared with you, and I think we may have even talked a little bit with, you know, previous iterations with some of your listeners. You know, there's just this, there's this activity that we have undertaken here in Boston, the Archdiocese of Boston, and then in Rhode Island, began in Rhode Island, actually, Joe, but it's called Operation Loretto. It's a celebration of family. And the long short is it's an activity, Joe, that we look to replicate. And it's through a partnership with a particular pastor in a parish, right? And
okay.
One of the elements, Joe, one of the elements of Operation Loretto is Eucharistic procession. Okay, there are four elements. I won't go into them all now. But one of them, Joe, is Eucharistic procession. It's literally taking the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ and bringing them to the streets. And why I'm sharing this, Joe, why I'm responding to your question, your succinct question, the way I am, is that, you know, so many people, even Catholics, and this is not a judgment when I say this, because I've been this guy, they don't know Christ. And they don't know, you know, they have not fully, I think, encountered and immersed themselves in the beauty of the Paschal mystery and what that entails and the strength that we get out of, you know, of the Holy Mass and, you know, the Eucharist, the liturgy of the Eucharist in particular, right? And so, you know, in conversations with some of these very holy priests, what we've wrestled with, Joe, and maybe it's an old, an age-old question, is how do you bring Christ to others? Because I think what we have to recognize, Joe, is that you look around, you know, you look around church, right? And this is this one padre's perspective. And he said, you look at, you know, who's coming to the men's leadership conferences. He already knows who's coming, Joe.
Amen. Right? Yeah.
And it's people that have that know the Lord. They know the Master. So I think the question is, Joe, how do we bring him? I think we have to get really creative with how we, not do we just tell our story, but how we bring Christ to others. I gave you a long answer to a short question.
No, you do, and I love the visual that you gave us with the procession. I mean, it, you know, part of that is becoming a domesticated church and not relying on the walls of worship, so to speak, whereby we the Mass takes place, but bringing it out, you know, into the streets and, you know, into the homes. I feel like, and it, when I speak with you and the work you're doing for the Diocese of Boston, which is so important, because I feel like there's a chasm there, Mike, where it's like, you know, young people, I think they're starving for a relationship with Christ, and the, how do I want to say this? The formality of the Mass. And I'm not saying that in a negative way, but the structure and the ritualistic nature of it. It's almost like too big of a jump. Am I making sense with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
You are. Yeah,
it's like almost like you have to, you know, and I'm speaking to myself because I'm, you know, I was in Mass yesterday and you know, I was, you know, it was fairly crowded, but it was like there was just nobody under like 25. You know, there were some some infants, you know, and some younger children that were there with parents. But like, I just felt like, you know, from, you know, and this I feel like most Sundays from like, I just don't see those 16 to 28 year olds. I feel like 30 year olds. I feel like those younger, you know, late teens and early adults. I feel like it's, you know, it's just, and that makes me nervous because I look at all the unhappiness and the mental health challenges, and you can't, the Paschal Mystery, not that it's level five and we have to start out at level one, but I just feel like, you know, when I wanted to delve into this, I felt like it's like, they almost need it, like, you know, you don't learn honors biology until you've had some level of anatomy. You know what I mean? Am I making sense, or am I confusing you?
100% makes sense. 100%. And we're aligned. And frankly, I think most, you know, faithful Catholics and, you know, and the good Padres would agree with that. You know, it's, and not that, Joe, it's not a bridge too far, right? And it's not a mountain too high. But it's a struggle because, you know, the parents of those, and I'm not casting aspersions, please know this, and I know you're not either, but the parents of the, you know, of the 10, the 12, the 16, the 20-year-old kids, you know, maybe they were poorly catechized, right? Because the younger kids, you know, Joe, Natalia and I, we're part of this Seaside Life Team. We're part of this life team for the collaborative in Hingham, okay? And it's awesome. I think I've told you privately about how incredible these kids are. You know, the kids that are involved, right? And then, you know, at 5:30 Mass, the church is packed, right? The church is packed with these young kids. They're, you know, 8th grade, 9th, 10th graders. They're going through. Now, and I'm not trying to be unfair here, so please forgive me.
No.
But most of those kids, they're there because they're checking the block, Joe.
Absolutely.
The block, right? Because the reality is after they get their confirmation, they're punching out, right? Or we don't see them the way that we see them every
week. No, what
you know,
yeah, but like
last comment, I'll hand it right back to you very, very quickly. One of the young Padres that I've been communicating with, or a pastor I've been communicating with recently, he said in an effort, Joe, to bring people back to the community, right? You know, to the church, to bring them back into the fold. They sent invitations to all of the young couples that had been married in the church in this collaborative over the course of the last 2 years. And they said, please come. The Knights of Columbus are running a pancake breakfast for you. Please come. Please celebrate community. Joe, and I won't even ask you how many couples you think came. I'll give you the answer. It was zero. Zero, Joe.
Breaks my heart.
Zero. Yeah.
And it's almost like, you know, like, you know, with the line I've said 1,000 times, but I never knew God was all I needed until God was all I had. Like, you know, you're getting confirmed at a young age, and like life hasn't kicked you in the face yet, you know, and other than maybe, you know, a B minus in pre-algebra or whatever you're taking academically, you know, there's no 12 to 13 year old that's having, you know, endured a lot of things. But I feel like, you know, we're giving them this, like, I don't want to call it a frail foundation, but it's like there's nothing that, what's the bridge? Like, what are we doing to keep them engaged at a higher level? I do want to come back with this conversation. But, folks, we're going to take a quick break. I'm here with co-host Colonel Mike Manning, Professor of Leadership Studies at Northeastern University.
To you, our faithful family of listeners, no words can express how much we appreciate your standing in the gap with us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. It is truly your amazing prayer power, your undaunting commitment that has enabled us to stay on the air. No doubt about it. be assured of our daily prayers, not only for you, but for your families as well. We pray that God will continue to bless you as you bless us. To join us and become a ministry partner, visit our website at inhissign.com or give us a call at 610-527-2906.
Welcome back to Souls on Fire. I'm with co-host Mike Manning. We're talking about the Paschal Mysteries that we get to celebrate every Sunday at the Sacramental Mass. Mike, I know John Paul II, in his letter on keeping the Lord's Day holy, wrote that to celebrate Sunday is to make present the graces of the Paschal Mystery, which is the climax of salvation history. Somewhere between... This is going to sound, I don't think it's blasphemous, but is the, today, strictly today, because we say that, don't answer for a couple seconds, but because we taught and to, we believe, you and I believe, that Sunday is a whole, is a day of obligation. Like, do you feel like that helps or hinders the gospel message of Christ? As crazy as that question sounds. You know what I'm saying?
No, I do. Yeah.
I almost twofold.
Yeah.
Ged, please, I'm not interrupting you the whole program, but Ged.
No. I stepped on you, brother. Please, finish your thought, and then I'll jump in.
No, I almost feel like, you know, two things, right? If it's an obligation and I miss the obligation over whatever dark period, couple weeks, then in today's culture, right? We don't have much stick-to-itiveness are we just now saying, oh, well, why bother now? It's like me when I go on my diet at the beginning of the year. You know, hey, I cheated. Instead of saying, you know, I had a bad day, let's hit the reset button and go. And I'm not saying lower the bar. I'm not saying that. But I feel like, you know, I look back at, like, you know, my own personal life. And, you know, my dad, you could have, Mike, if you were staying at our house, if you were 26 years old as a young adult that, you know, went to a bunch of taverns, and you ended up spending the night at my house. You know, you were going to Mass. You were getting up for Sunday Mass. And yeah. I certainly applauded that by my parents, but, you know, four of the seven siblings that I have, you know, aren't practicing Catholics right now. You know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Like, I feel like it's the paradigm shift, right? We don't have to go; we get to go.
Yeah.
You know.
No, that's
feel like...
yeah. So beautiful. And I, Joe, even earlier in the conversation tonight, I was thinking, you shared that with me many times before, you know, about
yeah.
your pop. And I remember even, you know, Mo coming to the house. You guys were dating, and
yeah,
you know, she's hanging out with Grandpa, and because mm-hmm. you guys were going to Mass. And, you know, I think, Joe, it's become, and I, you and I, we're not piling on or, you know, we're not casting aspersions here. I think, and it's not a holier than, you know, than now,
no.
conversation. I do think, Joe, though, for a lot of people and a lot of those that, you know, would like to say that they're Catholic or do say they're Catholic, I think they do look at Sunday and the obligation to go to church. I think they look at that, Joe, as a burden because honestly, it speaks to our priorities, Joe, because I've been guilty of this. I will tell you right now, as a young dad coaching soccer, running around like a lunatic on Sundays. And you know what? I did not always, I failed, Joe, to, you know, know, it was always, hey, look, we're going to get to Mass, and, you know, I'd oftentimes see the trainers there at Christ the King, right? And we'd go for that, you know, that 8 o'clock, that last chance Mass. But I guess as I reflect back on that, and I'm looking at myself here, was I emphatic enough? And was Mass supposed to be the last thing that I did that day? Because I think what I had prioritized, and I think a lot of people do, Joe, is we prioritize other things. And what you and I and other people have learned, Joe, largely through pain and suffering and failure, but because I think we've been given the gift of encountering Christ, that we know how much we need it. And there is a paradigm shift that occurs because it's not an obligation, Joe. You want it. It becomes a need. And that's what's missing right now, is that hunger.
Yeah, now where do you – okay, now finish. All right, so the coach in me is going to say, okay, keep going. Like you can't make somebody hungry. Is it they just – they have to – they pursue it in so many other avenues, none of which are through the Lord, and when they come up, snake eyes, they keep searching and find it, or is it, you know, what do you do to?
I think guys like us, this is where I've arrived, is, again, we're no better than anybody, right? But those of us true believers, let me phrase it differently. I think we have to do a lot more, Joe. I think we have to do a lot more than we're doing. And, you know, I don't know what that looks like, but I think it's how can we create opportunities for people to encounter Christ? And I think it starts by, you know, you and I were, you know, part of this, you know, this thread of, you know, like-minded men. And I remember, you know, a year or so past, you know, one of the men saying, look, you know, the most important thing that we can do, and I happen to agree with it, is, you know, we got to be in a state of grace, Joe. It's St. Francis of Assisi, you know, you preach the gospel, use words when necessary. So I think it's, we got to get our own houses in order, you know, individually. We're in a state of grace. But, Joe, I think we have to literally be expeditionary in the way that we encounter people and we invite them. And, you know, maybe it's through, you know, like literally and metaphorically, it's bringing Jesus to the streets like we do in Eucharistic procession, or the way that the missionaries of charity go out and they encounter Jesus in his most distressing disguise, right? Those that are the homeless, the drug addicted. I think, Joe, we got to look for opportunities to extend an invitation to people to know him, whether that's coming to church or engaging them in conversation. Because as I wrap my thoughts here, Joe, Coach, as a contact of mine, a colleague that I've gotten to know at the Archdiocese of Boston who works in the offices there, is he'll say, hey, we're in pagan times. You know, we're in pagan times now. And so I think we do need a paradigm. I think you hit the nail on the head. We got to change the way we think about how we evangelize.
We do, because it's not the Mass alone mentality isn't working. And again, I'm coming back to the crutch of, well, if I'm going to Mass on Sundays, I'm doing enough, and it's not enough. I'm saying that to myself as much as I am the audience. I mean, you know, it's not. I mean, to your point, you know, and I love your phrasing there, like, what are the opportunities that we're presenting as we try and as we're called to evangelize, right? If we claim to be disciples of Christ, we're obligated then to evangelize. And what are the opportunities to encounter Christ outside of the church, so that, and again, the sacramental Mass is the huge climax of salvation history, right? And that's where our redemption is. We're redeemed through the Paschal mystery. The saving love of God is most fully revealed in the life, and especially the passion, death, resurrection, and ascension of His Son. And we celebrate that every Mass. You know, the liturgy of the Word, you know, precedes the liturgy of the Eucharist. And but we need more than the mass, you know.
I think we do. I mean, I think because we got to get them there, right? I mean, it's not, and you and I are not diminishing the part. The mass is everything, right? The mass is where we. That's where we celebrate the Paschal mystery, and that's where we're sustained. We have to get people there, though, Joe.
Yeah, you can't catechize the ignorant.
No,
the fallen away, so to speak.
Right.
And I'm not saying that in judgment. I'm not saying when I say ignorant, I'm just saying like you can't begin like catechesis only happens after the foundation is not only laid but cultivated and framed and watered and weeded, you know?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think it takes coach, you know, there's no magic button. There isn't a pill for this. You know, I think it's gotta be a deliberate, now use the phrase we use in the Army. It's a campaign. Like we need a campaign. It's like persistent engagement. Right. And to your point, you know, Joe, like we, you know, you mentioned your own family, my own family, you know, I didn't grow up as large a family, but the, you know, I'm one of five and I'd say that
you had a big family.
Yeah. Today. Right. But you know, we, coach, you know, I love them all. I do love them all. They may not love me the same way. I'm joking, but, there's, you know, I have a couple of my sisters that they're great people. But they don't, period. They don't practice their faith the way that mom and dad, you know, encouraged and the way mom and dad modeled for us. You know, they just don't. They don't practice it that way. And so even in families like ours where, you know, where mom and dad are living it and, you know, Joe, I know my own kids, you know, because I know this is probably not even helpful, Joe, but I can't help it. Every time that I'm talking to one of the kids, I'm saying, did you pray today? You know, did you pray today? And my kids are young adults like yours. Did you pray today? You know, let's make sure you get to mass. You know, that's important. That's what sustains us. So it's these kind of persistent. They grew up in a family that was very imperfect, but we tried to do it right. And we all have free will, coach. And
yeah.
You know, you got to make a deliberate choice to stay in the fight once you know the truth. But for everybody else, I think coming back to the beginning of our conversation, we have an obligation. And again, I don't have the answer here other than I know we got to do more to bring Christ to others.
Yeah. And it's a daunting task. I mean, I feel like, you know, as you said that about your sisters, and I could say that about my siblings too. It's like it's one at a time. I get that, but it's like okay, now then, that's one. You know, those fallen away people, you know, are having children, right? And then what does that look like?
Yeah.
And they're even further falling away, and then further falling away, and then I don't know. I mean, I know. My obligation is one person at a time, and just bringing one person, you know, to Christ, you know, and you know, I try and pray every day, you know, the last prayer I pray is let me see Christ in everyone I meet today, and let me be Christ to everyone I meet today, and you know that's really all I can do. But you know, man, it's depressing, Mike, when you go into church and. Especially a Sunday mass, and you know it's either you know real young families or real you know older people, and you know it just seems like we've just lost like a few generations in there, and you know, and then when I think about our unhappiness and our sadness and our depression and our mental health and how far away we are from that balance, you know, I think it's. I've said this 1,000 times on the radio and beyond, but I think so much of the problem with the mental health component is we've removed God from the equation, and
100%.
We're just kind of, you know, floating around like a rudderless, you know, ship in a stormy sea.
100%.
You know?
Yeah, Coach. There was last night with these young people, young woman that is our youth minister for the collaborative. She does a beautiful job. Young woman, 24, 25 years old. But she did an exercise, Joe, and there was a, and I'll send the video to you. It's a guy by, did you ever hear of Gabby After Dark? It's a, he has a YouTube channel. He's a Catholic.
No, what, say it again.
It's Gabby. I think it's G-A-B-B-I, Gabby After Dark. And
okay.
It's, this dude's got a YouTube channel. He's and with a lot of followers, Joe. But and I was not familiar with this guy, but she showed us last night, and she did a beautiful job with this. But it was, and you know, Cardinal Seurat, Pope John Paul II talked about this. You know, this Pope Benedict, the importance and the role of silence, Joe. Silence, because you know, God speaks to us in the depths of our heart in silence, right? And so, you know, the evil one has a number of different titles and uses a number of different approaches, right? But it's, you know, the great deceiver, you know, is one, certainly. But the other one is Satan wants to create so much confusion and noise, Joe. And right, and so what
noise
has become
chaos,
an absolute epidemic is the use of our phones. And, you know, and this guy, it was so powerful. I'll send it to you. It's been an 8-minute video, but he's talking about very succinctly and just beautifully about silence. But he said, look, you know, he actually used the phrase, he said, we gaze upon our phones, right? We scroll, Joe, right? And we caress our phones. It's the way that it's like, it has become our precious, which, you know, a throwback to the Lord of the Rings. It's been, you know, these phones become, it just sucks us in. And this, we're supposed to gaze upon the cross, right? And so God, yes, he can speak to us in through the confusion. But the bottom line is, he doesn't always choose to encounter us that way. He wants to encounter us intimately and in quiet, when our soul and our mind is quiet, when we're at rest. And Satan doesn't want that. And so he creates all this confusion and noise, Joe, so we can't even hear the Lord.
So true, man. I think, you know, the chaos, right? That, you know, because you can't, you know, you're anxious when you're chaotic. You know, you got 1,000 thoughts going on in your brain. And it I'll be honest, Mike, it takes me, in my morning prayer, it takes me 10 to at 6:15 in the morning in the chapel here at school, it takes me 10 to 15 minutes to kind of still myself. And that's even before the days gets going, you know.
Yeah.
And I say that not bragging at all, because I'm embarrassed about that. But, you know, you wake up and, okay, what do I got to do today? What are, you know, where are my kids? What's the state of, you know, each one of their endeavors, you know, work, life, personal, you know. And then instead of just the kind of being still and know that I'm Lord, right? That's what we're taught.
Yeah. No, that's right.
You know, it's just,
and Coach, think, thank goodness, right? I mean, you've got a chapel there at school. What a gift. And,
yep,
you know, you're using
no
it. And I, one thing I would just say is, you know, I wonder, Coach, what would your prayer life look like if you didn't have, if you weren't going to school, right? And you didn't have the chapel there. You know, it's just, there's so many, and this is not Manning Pollen on you, Coach. I'm illuminating that there, we get pulled in so many different directions. We get.
No doubt.
Right?
No doubt.
And
well, we also pride ourselves in what? Multitasking, right? I got a lot of oars in the water, and I can, you know, that's like, that's part of like the misconception of good leadership, right? You know, like, hey,
right.
I can, you know,
exactly.
I can handle all
exactly
these different things and be efficient, be impactful, and be effective. And, you know, look at me, aren't I great? And, you know, and yeah, it, you know, it's, but to your point, I think it was Chief Justice, well, I don't know who, I don't know if it was Clarence Thomas. One of them just said recently, like, we're so fanatical about our phones, but if somebody came from, you know, another planet and viewed the average American, you would think that the cell phone was part of the human anatomy, you know, because I find myself doing that. I mean, I find myself like, you know, the 2 or 3 days that, you know, in the last 6 months that I've forgotten my phone at home, you know, and I hide behind the fact that, oh, what if one of my loved ones, what if one of my kids needs to get a hold of me, or, you know, but the truth is, like, you know, I'm too reliant on that too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't do social media in that sense, but I get a news feed from it, and, you know, I'm not TikToking or doing any of that, but like I do use it as what I would call a primary source of information. You know, but
and you know,
at the
Coach,
end of the day,
we just in response, Coach, right? It's the phone's like an appendage. It's an appendage to us, and then it's an energy suck, and it's what takes our, I don't know. Aside from even communicating with God, Joe, we communicate with the phone more than we do with other human beings.
Yeah, and something that was maybe by design, it wasn't, but the thought process was that it would serve to connect us, you know, with those we love. It's done nothing of the sort, and actually serves to keep us in isolation, you know, which is crazy. You know, as we close out the Paschal mystery, I want to talk about Catholicism says that a sacred mystery is a divine mystery which can't be grasped by mere human reasoning and can only be revealed by God through grace. And that is so true, right? I mean, all of it, right? The whole, it's a mystery in the sense that, like, it's got this huge question mark there, but it's basically, for me, as I interpret that, our limited depth and breadth of our own humanity, you know, we only come to understand the Paschal mystery as a sacred mystery that's only understood and revealed through God's grace. And you alluded to that earlier.
It's beautiful.
You know? Mike.
It's beautiful, Coach.
I want to talk about, and we're not a political show, but I do want to get your take on Cardinal Strickland. And what are some of your thoughts on what's transpired with him?
So, Coach, I had two principal thoughts, you know, or three. The first one, I was sad. You know, I was sad that I was sad just across that this event had taken place, because it just, I do see it as a blow to the church here in the United States. Number two, the second reaction I had was I looked at it from a leadership perspective, and I think that, and I think there's people, and you may not, that won't necessarily agree with this statement, but I did look at the way that he, I think that the man cares deeply about the truth and representing the truth, and I almost wonder if he could represent the truth and defend the truth in a way that maybe he didn't attack his boss. Because I know that a number of the statements that he made about the Pope in particular were you know, pretty damning statements, and frankly they may have been true. I just, you know, again, having been raised in a, you know, an organization like the U.S. Army, you know, you have to, yeah, you got to defend the truth, but we always, you know, the way that I tried to comport myself and lead myself was that, you know, not speaking poorly of the boss, right? In public or even in private, certainly never with your subordinates, right? And then the other part, Joe, my last piece, and I'll wrap this and hand it back to you, is that I was also, as I look across the landscape, and I see other folks that are maybe that are deliberately behaving and speaking out in a way as to suggest that maybe the dogma and the doctrine of the church is wrong, and that maybe the Catholic Church are the fathers of the church interpreted, the Gospels or the Christ's intent as it pertains to, maybe sexuality, marriage, I think they're creating a lot of confusion. And you know who the players are,
sure,
just as well as I do. And these guys, you can look at the bishops in Germany, right? Look at the bishops in Germany, for example. And, they're trying to, they're proponents of reimagining what Catholicism looks like, many of them, right? And
yeah.
Yet they're able to operate with impunity. And then we got Strickland, who's faithful to the tenets of the church, and he gets punched in the face. He gets removed. So it reeks of hypocrisy, and that's another reason why I was very sad.
Yeah, well, I guess it comes back to, for me, it comes back to, when a pope removes a bishop from his post, so to speak, I don't know, my simple mind says it's usually for personal misconduct or commission of a canonical crime against the canon, so to speak, and not necessarily for insubordination or however you would classify, derogatory feedback. I mean, is it within the Pope's rights, in your opinion, to make that decision or no?
I mean, I think yes. The issue, I wonder though, did he make the decision? Did he commission the decision, or were there others, in positions of power that did and acted in his name? Either way, it just creates, I think the current Pope has made some statements that would suggest that he, is not always aligned with, or doesn't always think as highly of, the Catholic Church in America, or certainly elements of it, as maybe doesn't think as highly of the Church in America as some of his predecessors. And so I think, Joe, that this decision caused a lot of hurt for people, and creates more confusion. And that's never a good thing.
No, it's not. My brother, we covered a lot of different topics tonight. As always, you're worth the price of admission, man. I appreciate everything you do for our church and for me personally. So I love you, my brother.
Thank you.
Have a great week.
Love you too, Coach. Thank you.
Folks, have a great week. This is Joe Traynor signing off. Go Birds on the road against the Chiefs tonight. God bless. Take care.